Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And we're joined today by Lisa Gardner, who is a number one New York Times bestselling author. She's out with her brand new novel, Look For Me. It is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. We've talked to Lisa several times over the years on this program, and Lisa, this book is no exception. You bring back Dee Dee Warren, that great Boston police detective, and you've also brought back Flora Dane, who we first met in Find Her a year or so ago. When you brought back Flora Dane for this book, was that because of the overwhelming response you heard from the fans? Because I loved the character when we first met her.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian. Yes. I never have a plan for my characters. Heaven forbid that would make my job too easy. So Dee Dee Warren was never planned to be a continuing character. But yes, people responded to her so strongly. I think they just loved her attitude that I brought her back. And Flora Dane definitely has struck a nerve, particularly, I would say, even for myself. She has such a powerful story. You know, here's a young woman, has, you know, the best promise in life, goes off to spring break, is kidnapped and held for 472 days. And it's 6 years later, and she's still trying to figure out, how do you build a life after that? I mean, what is normal? What is happy? There's all those things she promised herself when she was, you know, abducted. You know, if I only get through this, you know, I'll never complain again. I'll never, you know, feel sad again. And yet real life is real life, and she's gone through this terrible trauma. I think she's completely compelling. I think she's that kind of character readers start rooting for. I mean, if she can find her way back to happiness, you know, maybe we all can.
This story starts in the Brighton area of Boston, and I'm not familiar with Boston. I am in general, but can you describe what that area of town is like?
Brighton is like a village in Boston, and it's incredibly densely populated. It's like one of the... Boston is a like a series of villages, townships, whatever you want to call them, neighborhoods. And as even by Boston standards, Brighton is densely, densely packed. And it made it very interesting because here I have this scenario where an entire family has found murdered and their 16-year-old is missing. From a policing investigation, you almost have too much information. In a dense urban environment like that, it's not do you have witnesses. There's, you know, every building is an apartment overflowing with people. It's not is there security footage that you could get from a street cam or an ATM. There's millions of them. Or dozens, I guess I should say. It was interesting to interview with the detectives involved because way back when, you know, the challenge of working a major homicide in an urban environment was, could you get a clue? Now they're saying the biggest challenge is, can you manage all the information you get? Particularly, it's a missing teenager, it's an Amber Alert situation. You need to learn so much so fast, and you almost have too much to start with.
Do you see the people who want to help out the police, they give you all this information, and is it a matter of that they're giving untrue information, or is it a lot of innuendo, the kind of things that you'd hear in a small town that may or may not be true?
It's more just, again, the quantity of it. So one of the examples, I love researching with the police, and each time I learn something new, because police itself is always changing. And now in this day and age, just like the rest of us are on social media, so is the Boston PD. So they have a Facebook site, and they are like literally for a crime like this one, a murdered family, a missing teen, they need to get the community involved. So they would immediately be posting, actually, on Facebook. They do text alerts or Amber Alerts that would go out to everyone's phone in the area. So on the one hand, that's excellent. You now have an entire community looking for a missing teenager. On the other hand, the sheer volume of replies you're going to get from that, and some might be false, some might be to the best of their knowledge, but people actually aren't great eyewitnesses. Maybe he was tall, maybe he was short, maybe he was white, maybe he was black. You have to wade through it all trying to find the couple pieces of information that are what you really need. It's the needle in a haystack, and it begins to be, in this data-driven day and age, a really big haystack.
You mentioned the missing 16-year-old. We're talking about Roxy. And in the book,
yes.
you publish, or you have written these letters that Roxy wrote for school about the perfect family. And that turns out to be a clue that the police look at. But when you put those in your book, how do you find a voice of a 16-year-old girl who's been through what Roxy went through when that's not your story?
You know, I'm a character-driven writer. I love suspense for the twist and turn. I'm someone who, when I'm writing, I actually don't know who did it. I don't know what's going to happen next. So it's as big a surprise for me as it is for you, the reader. But the character is the part that really keeps me working. Who is Roxy Baez? What happened to her family? We know once they were torn apart and the kids were in the foster care system, but we know the mom also cleaned up her act and they all got back together. And this was supposedly their happily ever after, except now they've all been murdered. I don't know the answers to those questions. And Roxy's voice and Roxy's story, it just does come to me. I have no other word for it. In writing those journal entries, like her trying to understand what happened to her family, what's happened to her life, I didn't even know how I was going to use them. I didn't even know what they meant. It's the part of the creative process for the writer that's a lot of, remains fun 25 years later, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's what this has been all about.
We're talking with Lisa Gardner, whose brand new novel, Look For Me, is available now wherever books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. You mentioned, Lisa, the foster care system, and you had to delve into that, I assume, to research it. Is that the type of research that can drive a normal person to drink?
Well, actually, in my real life, I'm involved in it, so that'll drive you to drink. I do work with at-risk kids and foster care families in my real life, volunteering. I think if you do a lot of time researching crime like I do, you have to find a way to give back, or it is very hard to sleep at night. The good news is there's a lot of really amazing foster care families out there. I know of a family who took in what we call a feral child, which is a three-year-old who was, like, so severely neglected. He didn't have powers of speech. He didn't know how to eat with silverware, kind of think Tarzan. But through their sheer love and devotion, I mean, he is an incredible young man now. So there really are great stories. But the truth is the foster care system is completely overburdened. We have more kids than we have homes. The things I describe and Look For Me are real. Kids are just kind of piled in now. Everyone knows it's not the best, but the opioid crisis, you have more kids than you have homes for. They have to go somewhere. And what Roxy describes for her and her siblings, they can't even go to the same home because no one has that kind of room. These are real experiences out there. I think fiction at its best can give us an opportunity to walk in someone else's shoes and think about some things we might not have otherwise. But I think the core of the book is this heart, is Roxy trying to figure out her family went through the worst and they found each other again. So what is family? How much do you forgive? You know, how far would you go for the people you love?
In addition to the foster care system, you also delve into the areas of child pornography and these gangs that permeate so many of these early teenagers in their middle school years. And as you delved into that world and try to write that, I would think that it's not the easiest thing to write about, and it's hard to do in a thriller because your book is a page-turner, and sometimes that tends to slow it down. How do you get all of these issues, you touch on those, and not slow the story down at all?
Well, in some ways, really, the entire book really just has to do with families. And if you research gangs, for a lot of kids, that becomes their family, too. It's really, particularly in an urban environment like Brighton, how do you survive when so many of our families are fractured, when so many kids are on their own for one reason or another? That becomes the appeal of gangs. Friendship plays a very powerful role, too. And Look For Me, the alliances that are kind of formed in foster care, you know, kind of the good kids versus the bad kids, so that they can just get through the night. And it's, I think by kind of tying it all together, you can keep the action happening while just showing at heart, all of us are trying to do our best. All of us are trying to survive. Roxy's case is pretty extreme, but the friendship she makes, her sister choosing that, nope, she wants the safety of a gang. all of these things become piece of this larger puzzle of, you know, who are these kids and what lengths did they go to survive?
I'm sure when you write characters, you tend to have feelings of familial love with them. They're like your children. And when you tell me that you don't know who did it, do you ever feel guilty for having in your mind suspected somebody who may or may not have turned out to be the doer?
You know, I'm always a little sad when I figured out who did it, because I am a psychological suspense writer. So I like to write and, you know, populate my book in general with, you know, good characters who've done bad things, but good bad people who also have some redeemable qualities. I don't like, you know, the bad guy to be the, you know, kind of technical villain with the twisty mustache and the evil laugh. And there is a little bit of, when you finally get to the answers of some of these puzzles, a little poignancy, like, oh. But what I do love best about suspense is a puzzle. And I think what drives us all, whether it's me while I'm writing it, or you while you're reading it, is we do all want to see, can we guess who did it in the end? And it's fun when you figure it out, and it's more fun for me if you don't.
Well, it's just a fantastic read, just like all the other ones that I've read of yours are. This one is called Look For Me. It is a novel by Lisa Gardner, who's a number one New York Times bestselling author, and it is available wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. This one is going to shoot right up that list, I have no doubt. Lisa, fantastic offering this winter. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.